Russia accuses the United States of being involved in the alleged drone attack on the Kremlin.
White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby called that claim ludicrous.
Plus, a new public opinion poll reveals Americans' changing attitudes towards supporting Ukraine.
And we have consistently seen a very high level of preparedness to pay an economic price, though not in human lives, for supporting Ukraine for the entire period from March 22 to October 22. In this particular one, we found really the first measurable drop in support.
And later in the program, how a young man from Canada is helping Ukrainian soldiers one step at a time. One dry, warm step at a time. Today is Friday, May 5th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. The story of the alleged drone attack on the Kremlin gets bigger as Russia accuses the United States of being involved, a charge the White House calls ludicrous. Reuters' Zachary Goldman has the story.
Russia on Thursday claimed that the United States was behind what it says was a drone attack on the Kremlin that aimed to kill President Vladimir Putin. That accusation came from Putin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov on Thursday, who said, without providing any evidence, that Ukraine had carried out the alleged drone strike acting on orders from Washington. White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby called that claim ludicrous. Kirby told CNN, quote, "The United States has nothing to do with it. We don't even know exactly what happened here, but I can assure you that the United States had no role in it whatsoever." Footage from Wednesday shows what appears to be a flying object nearing the domed roof of the Kremlin before exploding. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Kyiv did not target Putin and denied involvement.
"We don't attack Putin or Moscow. We fight on our territory."
But Wednesday's alleged strike isn't the first time suspected Ukrainian drones have hit targets deep inside Russia.
"It is technically possible. Ukraine has several types of drones that can fit the profile."
Samuel Bendit is a senior fellow with the Center for a New American Security. He told Reuters Ukraine might have good reason to show Russia its reach.
"If it was, in fact, a Ukrainian drone that was able to penetrate all the way into the Kremlin, speaks volumes about the strengths and the gaps and the problems within the air defense and electronic warfare defenses if, in fact, they fail to stop this drone."
Next week, Moscow is set to hold a massive Victory Day parade, a Soviet-era military display commemorating the defeat of Nazi Germany. Were Ukraine able to hit the Kremlin in the run-up, it could send a powerful message.
"This notion of the Kremlin as a fortress, I mean, that's what it is, it's a fortress, now being subject to air attacks is something that's going to be difficult for the Russian establishment to kind of explain."
Alexander Vindman is a former U.S. Army officer and now with Johns Hopkins University.
"It's interesting that the Ukrainians have probably been trying to do this for many, many months at this point, to strike out at a critical strategic target, not from a military standpoint, this isn't going to win the war, but from a messaging standpoint that Russia can't just go on attacking Ukrainian cities and not suffer some sort of blowback or some sort of consequence."
Before dawn on Thursday, Russia fired 24 combat drones at Ukraine. Kyiv's air defenses claimed to have shot down 18 of 24 drones fired at the capital. There were no reports of any casualties.
That's Reuters' Zachary Goldman reporting. Heads of the U.S. intelligence agencies met with senators in Washington on Thursday. Among the topics discussed was Ukraine and the attack on the Kremlin. I spoke with VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden about it.
"Well, one of the big takeaways is that as the war in Ukraine, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, drags into its second year, it seems that Russian leader Vladimir Putin is getting hit with a small dose of reality. And what the director of national intelligence, Avril Haines, told members of the Senate Armed Services Committee is that Putin has probably scaled back some of his immediate ambitions when it comes to consolidating control of Ukraine. Initially, the U.S. intelligence agencies assessed that, and they still do, that overall what he wants to do is to topple the government in Kyiv and conquer Ukraine as part of fulfilling his destiny. But they see right now that the difficult slog that Russian forces are facing, the ammunition shortfalls, the personnel shortfalls that they're facing has forced him to accept a little bit of reality. And so now what he's looking to do more is perhaps consolidate control of the territory in eastern and southern Ukraine that he already occupies, and take other measures in the short term to make sure that Ukraine is not able to draw any closer than it already is with the West and with NATO. They warn, though, that this dose of reality only goes so far, and they're not seeing anything to indicate that Putin and his officials in Moscow at the Kremlin are willing to have any sorts of negotiations that would result in anything resembling an immediate or long-lasting peace. Instead, if there are any negotiations, they still warn that Russia would likely be using that just to buy time to prep for building up its forces again and accelerating and intensifying its invasion.
And now on to the story of the day, the alleged drone attack on the Kremlin in Moscow. What's the United States intelligence agencies saying about that?
Well, there's a lot of concern there. They're looking at it closely. But the bottom line is, according to Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, is that they don't have any information right now. They don't have any independent assessment right now that would allow them to provide any sort of, you know, assessment of what really happened. There are lots of things that they see, just like a lot of analysts are seeing when they look at the video, when they look at the photos, that raise questions. The intelligence officials said that, you know, the size of the explosion, you know, and the fact that it didn't do very much damage and it got as close as it could to, as it did to the Kremlin in the video, is suspicious. They say it's suspicious that the timing of the attack, because it is well known, not just to the U.S., but to the Ukrainians, that Vladimir Putin does not usually spend his nights in the Kremlin, and so wouldn't have been around to be the target of this attack, and that's something the Ukrainians would have known. And the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency agreed with a lawmaker who said that it looks like the type of drones, based on the size of the explosion and the objects you can see in the video, that these are smaller drones that would need to be controlled line of sight. And the DIA chief said that is plausible. And if that's the case, this is not a drone attack that would have been directed by somebody in Ukraine, in Kyiv. It would be, have to be somebody controlling these drones from the ground. And so these are just more questions that the U.S. has, along with everybody else, about what really happened. Was this an actual attempt by Kyiv to target the Kremlin? Or was this yet another Russian false flag operation? And of course, the Russians have a long history of using these types of operations to justify their actions going forward.
Jeff Selden, VOA's national security correspondent. Mr. Selden, thanks for your time. Thanks for your analysis today.
My pleasure.
The head of the Wagner Group is threatening to pull his troops out of Bakhmut, the scene of some of the fiercest fighting of the war. AP correspondent Charles Della Desma has the story.
Russia's Wagner boss threatens a Bakhmut pullout in Ukraine. The owner of the Wagner Group has vowed to pull his troops out of the protracted battle for the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut next week, accusing Russia's military command of starving his forces of ammunition and causing them heavy losses. Yevgeny Prigozhin, a notorious millionaire with long-time links to Russian President Vladimir Putin, claims his forces had planned to capture Bakhmut by May 9, but he says he hasn't received enough artillery ammunition supplies from the Russian military since Monday. Known for his bluster, the Wagner boss has previously made unverifiable claims and made threats he hasn't carried out. I'm Charles Diladesma.
As we've heard, Moscow now accuses the United States of helping Ukraine attack the Kremlin with a drone. It's a mixed reaction in Kyiv, with some people saying the whole event was fabricated and is an attempt by Russia to justify further attacks, while others say the fact that Ukraine can fly a drone all the way to the Kremlin shows Russia's weaknesses. We get more from Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Steve, to be honest, here in Kyiv, let's say there are two types of reactions. So first type of reaction would be that, Russian air defense is that weak that actually Ukrainians are able to get all this way deep into Russia, to the capital, to the Kremlin, like, you know. And definitely people are very skeptical about this, and most of people do not believe this is true. Because of this attack, Russia is canceling the parade on the 9th of May, which is a very important thing in Russia, and this is basically the reason why they canceled. Then there are, like, additional stuff to to, you know, to explain people why this so-called, as Russia calls it, special military operation is happening, because we are in danger, you know, and so on and so forth. So this kind of messages and this kind of rhetorics is around. And this is why people skeptical and people think that it was a provocation, because Russia needed certain incident happening in order to, well, to verify their actions in Ukraine and to verify their actions inside Russia for Russian people. And this is the main idea and the main thing that people are discussing here.
So you brought up the parade on May 9th. Can you explain to the audience, please, what is May 9th? What does it mean in Russia?
So for Russia, this is the victory day because the whole world is celebrating on the 8th, when actually all the Allied forces were on the territory of Berlin, right? But Russia is celebrating the 9th because, well, according to the historic events, USSR forces were there on the 9th. So in the USSR, it was this kind of propaganda, and now in Russia, in modern Russia, is this propaganda that it's a huge victory of Russian people, so not even USSR nations, but Russian people. And this is something, a happy event. So it's really a celebration. And every year, Russia is trying to demonstrate how strong they are with all the equipment, with all the military equipment. I mean, with this parade of military equipment. And in Russia, this is a huge celebration to basically demonstrate how strong and how important Russia is and how unbeatable Russia is.
And lastly, Anna, I want to ask you about something else. Yesterday, after the show was recorded and broadcast, you sent me some video taken from your home of a drone flying over Kyiv. And at first, everybody, I think, was very scared to see this. It was broad daylight. There was a drone flying over the city. It was being shot at. Can you tell us what happened there? What's the story?
Yes, it was kind of weird situation happening, because when we finished our conversation, in something like in an hour, it was another air alert, air raid siren over Kyiv this time, Kyiv and Kyiv region. And at one point, I heard very clearly explosions and not even explosions, but the sound of shooting, very, very loud sound of shooting. And we saw a drone flying just above our residential building, doing circle. It was in the air for around 20 minutes. And then at one point it was shut down and everyone thought that it was a Russian drone. So then later on, Ukrainian air defense confirmed that it was not a Russian drone. It was actually a Bayraktar drone that was used by Ukrainian forces somewhere in the Kyiv region for certain training reasons or whatever reasons there were. And it went malfunctioned and Ukrainian forces lost control of it. So it was decided to shut it down. Basically, this is a story, and this is what we have for the moment. So it was not an attack. It was just this kind of incident.
A bit of good news that you weren't being attacked. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, thank you for your time. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Just how has American public opinion toward Ukraine evolved since the war began, and what's driving that change? I speak with Shibley Telhami, non-resident fellow at the Brookings Institution and professor and head of the Critical Issues Poll at the University of Maryland.
To give you first a perspective, I've been polling on this issue since the start of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The first poll we did was March 2022, and this is really the fifth poll that we do because we have been trying to track the impact of the war on public opinion toward Ukraine and Russia. And so before we did this poll, the last one was in October 2022, and we have found up until that point consistent public support. We track it on several dimensions in terms of the public preparedness to pay a price for supporting Ukraine, including on rising oil prices and higher inflation, and whether or not they're prepared to pay in American lives for the war. And we have consistently seen a very high level of preparedness to pay an economic price, though not in human lives, for supporting Ukraine for the entire period from March 22 to October 22. In this particular one, we found really the first measurable drop in support. We found that by nearly 10 percentage points, some cases even more, Americans are preparedness to pay a price, economic price dropped. But it's also important to note that still, even with that drop, a majority of Democrats, over 60%, remains prepared to pay a high price for supporting Ukraine, while Republicans, only one third are prepared to pay an economic price in supporting Ukraine. So that's one of the findings that we have. Related to this is that one reason we think this is happening, in addition to the time, and now we've obviously, it's been more than a year since the start of the war, and people get a little bit restless, but we find that the support, the preparedness to pay a price for supporting Ukraine is very much a function of the public's assessment of who's winning and who's losing. And so up until last October, we found that the public assessment was that Russia isn't doing well and Ukraine is doing well. And there was a lot of reports related to that, particularly around the October poll. In the past few months, we have been in a stalemate, and some of the reports have not been as positive for the Ukrainians. So we've seen a matching drop in the public assessment that Ukraine is winning, and a similar drop in the number who think Russia is failing. And those two are very highly correlated with the extent to which the public is prepared to pay a price.
Now, do you have similar metrics for other wars and conflicts, for example?
Yes, we do. I mean, what happens, of course, what's different here, of course, is the U.S. is not fighting the war, right? I mean, the U.S. is supporting Ukraine. Typically, the metrics that we have, let's say it's when the U.S. is fighting a war, whether it's in Afghanistan or Iraq, and we've done polling on that, and other people have done polling on that. And we do find, in fact, this link between the public assessment of winning and losing and the preparedness to stay the course in the war are very highly correlated. So that is not actually surprising, but it is interesting that the public perception of winning and losing is shifting. And so, for example, if there are battles coming up in the next few months where Ukraine is seen to be winning and Russia is seen to be losing, and we do conduct another poll, let's say in 3 months after such an event, we're likely to find a spike in public support, at least in public preparedness to pay a price for supporting Ukraine.
Shibley Telhami is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a professor of political science and director of the Critical Issues Poll at the University of Maryland. Professor, thanks for your analysis today.
My pleasure.
Days before Russia invaded Ukraine, a Canadian journalist who saw the war looming began a social enterprise called St. Javelin to raise only $500 for Ukraine. Since then, it's become a powerful fundraiser for the war effort. Misha Komodowski has the story.
St. Javelin, a social enterprise created by Canadian journalist Christian Boris, started simply as an attempt to raise $500 to help Ukraine. And it began with a simple meme of the Madonna carrying a Javelin anti-tank weapon, designed by American artist Chris Shaw.
I believed that Russia was going to do what it did, right? So I wanted to just fundraise. I thought I could fundraise like $500 or something. So I printed some of these stickers. I put them up on Instagram and I said, does anybody want one? It's 10 bucks. And then I got a ton of messages and then I started a website.
And in the next few weeks, St. Javelin grew from being a fun meme to being a symbol of Ukrainian resistance.
So last year we donated like about Canadian, like almost 3 million. It's like 2.5 million US.
Today, the St. Javelin image is on hundreds of thousands of products, mugs and patches, stickers and flags. Even President Zelensky has a t-shirt. One of the main goals of St. Javelin is to raise money for the Ukraine war effort.
We've bought like almost 10 trucks, I think. It's kind of like people come to us with their needs.
Hundreds of thousands of people follow the organization's progress on social networks. Every day, Boris and his team post the latest news from Ukraine, making sure people stay updated. Boris himself goes to Ukraine regularly. There, he meets with the Ukrainian part of his team. He says these trips help him stay focused on what's important. In 2023, Boris's team hopes to move half of its production to Ukraine and help local producers.
We found manufacturers across Ukraine that do socks, t-shirts. We made fleece jackets that we just donated to ZSU. So we made like 500 of them.
Recently, in New York, he hosted a presentation of Ukrainian photographer Sasha Maslov's photo book called Saints that features images from the war. Misha Komodowski, VOA News, Toronto, Canada.
It's time for farmers in Ukraine to plant their crops, despite a series of significant challenges as Russia continues its war on the country. The agricultural industry faces mined fields, instability with the Black Sea Grain Initiative, and a ban on the export of some products to five EU countries. Lisa Bakletz has more from Warsaw.
Mikhailo Arkhapchev's combine harvester, damaged by fighting on the front line just 8 kilometers away from his fields in the Zaporizhia region. Now the Ukrainian farmer faces another sowing season near military action.
Shelling happens almost every day. Lots of ammunition is falling on the fields. The State Emergency Service of Ukraine even removed an unexploded warhead from a tornado rocket from my field.
About 2 million hectares of fields like Arkhapchev's have been mined and shelled across Ukraine. The Ukrainian Agrarian Council says another 5 million hectares are occupied by the Russians. It's also more financially difficult for Ukrainian farmers this year because they no longer have reserve funds to cover costs for the sowing season like they did last year.
This endless circle. Farmers have no money for sowing. They plant less, sell less. They have no money again. And all this will lead to a drop in our exports.
The instability surrounding the Black Sea Grain Initiative is another major problem for farmers. The deal brokered by the UN and Turkey and agreed to by Russia and Ukraine creates a safe corridor in the Black Sea for Ukrainian grain exports. And farmers got more bad news on April 28th when the European Commission announced restrictions on the import of products from Ukraine to Bulgaria, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania, and Poland. Ukraine's agricultural sector is a leading exporter of grain, so experts fear a shortage could lead to a food crisis. According to the Center for Food and Land Use Research, before Russia launched its war in Ukraine in 2022, Ukraine harvested about 108 million tons of grain and oil crops. The center says this year it is expected to harvest half as much. Lisa Bakletz for VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media, be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.